Well, today I want to talk about something that every one of us deals with in some form every day. Whether it's something we watch on television, whether it's situations that we deal with at work or at school, maybe it's from a neighbor, or maybe we deal with it at times even amongst God's people. Today I want to talk about a topic which I think in light of the last week is especially timely, and that topic simply is disrespect. More importantly, I guess, specifically, I want to ask the question that I've asked myself recently is, am I respectful? Some of you will remember, some of you weren't born yet, but some of you will remember the popular, I should say, comedian Rodney Dangerfield made a living many years ago with his statement, "I don't get no respect." And he told stories along the way of how people put him down for various reasons or whatever, but his comment was, I don't get no respect. And I think one of the reasons many people found this statement so humorous is that respect, even at that time, we're talking 50 years ago, that respect was woefully lacking in America. And to say that in our lifetimes we haven't seen it just get so much worse, again, would be such an understatement. And I could spend much time talking about the endless examples of disrespect. You know, maybe it's, if you've spent any time in your children's school, maybe it's the children's behavior in school or towards their parents. It's the political cartoons. It's the watching the television and the politicians with the complete, utter lack of respect for each other and us. Maybe it's the way people dress for formal occasions or for church. Or maybe it's just the way people treat each other in all situations. The list could go on and on. And I believe today that many people don't even truly understand what respect is. They live by the adage, and I used to kind of be this way, look, I'll treat you how you treat me. If you're disrespectful to me, then the gloves are off. But I think people may not know, let alone understand why it's important. If you looked in the dictionary for the definition of respect, it simply says to consider worthy of high or special regard. That's pretty straightforward. It also, the word respect refers to a mental outlook that affects how we live our lives and what we say and what we do. Now, not just what we say to the person's face, because I can fake it pretty well sometimes. It goes deeper than that, right? Because God knows our heart. I may be nice to someone's face who's really irritated me, and then afterwards, what I'm thinking isn't very respectful. What about you? You see, one of the most important lessons of the Christian life is the fact that we are all, in varying degrees, product of the ages that we live in. We can look at our lives and how we've changed. Maybe some things that we used to find appalling, now we're like, yeah, well, that's life. It doesn't make us so upset. See, I look at my own life and I see that the fact that we are products of the age we live in it makes sense when I look at my life over the years. My life, like some of yours, was pretty dysfunctional as a youngster. There was a lot of anger, a lot of violence, a lot of unrest, and a lot of disrespect. Not necessarily to the other people's faces, but when they weren't there, you heard all the talk behind their backs. At the time, I also had a temper, and because violence was a way of life, if I felt that you were being disrespectful, I didn't react in a very good way. You see, I was taught that you only show respect to those who are respectful to you first, and then only to their face. My role model at the time was bitter, mean, kind of a phony person, and I became a product of that environment. Now, I'd love to say 40, 50 years later that after being in God's church all this time that I've completely overcome those particular character flaws. But I understand lying is also a sin, so I won't say that. You see, it's a constant struggle sometimes to treat all people with the respect and the honor that I know that they should be getting when they say or they do something that aggravates me. You know, when you're driving to church on the interstate and that person about kills you. You guys know me. I say, oh my. Oh my. My fellow child of God, you almost killed me in a terrible crash and others. I will ask God's blessings upon you and wish that you reach your destination safely. That's not quite exactly what I think or sometimes what I say. How about you? You see, I have to pray about this regularly. What about you? If you're honest with yourself, would you say that you're a respectful person? Maybe the better question would be, would God say that you're a respectful person? Let's look at this today. You see, as everyone in this room, I believe, is trying to live a life that is more pleasing to God, it really is important for us to consider the importance of respect and how to maintain respect in every area of our lives. My objective today obviously isn't going to be to tell you what you should or shouldn't do, you know, a list of do's or don'ts. My objective specifically today is to talk about the principle of respect, and specifically from God's point of view. I chose to use today for my template for this sermon the Ten Commandments and help us see and remind ourselves how respect is a key component of all of those. And so we'll jump right in there. The first four commandments we've heard, we understand, really deal with and address respect for God. And we understand, brethren, we have to get this right. We have to get this right. See, we know these things, and what excuse are we going to have when we do get that time to stand before God and he says, let's talk about Joe, some of your, how you respect others. What am I going to say? What are you going to say? Well, I wish I'd only known that. It's not going to fly, is it? See, we have to get this right, and specifically in this particular case, as we look at the first four Ten Commandments, we have to understand completely that God, and consider God as worthy of the highest and most special regard at all times and in all situations, not just when I'm not irritated, right? At all times. You know, even when you smash your finger with a hammer, and maybe you say something that you probably shouldn't. Maybe I'm the only one that's done that, but maybe not. Right, we have to consider God as worthy of the highest and most special regard in all situations. In fact, he commands that of us in his first two commandments. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 6. He specifically talks about that. Deuteronomy chapter 6. We'll read verses 4 and 7 to start. And I'll read out of the New King James Version. Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4, says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Verse 7, You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Again, to put God below anything or anyone else is blatant disrespect for him. We talked briefly about, you know, taking God's name in vain as another example of showing disrespect towards him. The Jewish Study Bible says this. It says, A false oath would show contempt for God by implying that the swearer does not fear his punishment. So many ways that we can get this wrong if we're not careful. What about the fourth commandment? What about the Sabbath day? Right? We I think all understand, but we have to get it in our head specifically that the Sabbath day is not just a day of rest. It's not just a day to go to work, not go to work and to relax in the morning and then say, oh, I got to get ready for church and go play church for a couple hours. It's just not just that. It's also and specifically a day that we come before God to honor him and show respect to him. Isaiah 58:13. Let's look there. Isaiah 58:13 talks about this. Again, reading out of the New King James Version. It says, if you turn your foot from the Sabbath, right, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Is that how we all observe the Sabbath? Not always. The Tonic says this. It says, if you refrain from trampling on the Sabbath, right, by showing disrespect. It's like, I guess I picture it. Somebody, you walk into somebody's house, they have new carpet down, you take off your shoes before you walk on the carpet, right? You're not trampling on that. We're to honor God in special ways on the Sabbath day, not just a day that we don't go to work and we just go to church and put in our time. Isaiah 58:13, again, let me read it out of the NET Bible version. Out of the NET Bible version, it says this. It says, you must observe the Sabbath rather than doing anything you please on my holy day. It says, you must look forward to the Sabbath and treat the Lord's holy day with respect. You must treat it with respect by refraining from your normal activities and by refraining from yourself, from your selfish pursuits, and from making business deals. But the second part here says you must look forward to the Sabbath. Do we look forward to the Sabbath, or do we just can't wait for Friday because tomorrow we don't have to work? How do we approach the Sabbath? Let me read it one more version out of the Complete Jewish Bible. Again, Isaiah 58:13 puts it this way. It says, if you hold back your foot on Shabbat from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call Shabbat a delight, Adonai's holy day, worth honoring, then honor it by not doing your usual things or pursuing your interests or speaking about them. Interestingly, here it talks about three categories, right? Refraining from normal activities. We understand that. We're not going to work. We're not doing the things we normally do Sunday through Friday. It talks about refraining from selfish or personal pursuits, not doing your own thing, right? We're focusing on God. This is God's 24-hour period of time we've set aside for him. And number three, talking about these things. Now, many of us don't get together that often, so we catch up every 7 days, and that's great, right? We catch up, we understand what's going on in people's lives, and we reinforce our relationships and hopefully make them stronger. But beyond that, what do we talk about on the Sabbath day? And I'm not giving a list of do's or don'ts. Things for us all just to consider. Turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 again, please. I want to look at this one more time. Deuteronomy 6, we'll read verses 5 and 6, which we touched on, but again, it reinforces what we're saying here. It says again, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. How do we do that? I don't have the answer for that, but understand, it's talking about with everything you have, God has to be first. With everything you have, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And how do we love him? How do we show that we love him? Again, by living by the words that he's given us. And it says, and these words, which I command you today, God shall be in your heart. You can write down Matthew 12, verse 34. In the New Living Translation, it says this. It says, whatever is in your heart determines what you say. Actually, we should turn there. Matthew 12, please. I'm sorry. There's more I want to talk about there. Matthew 12. Here we go. Matthew 12. We talked about verse 34 in the New King James. It says, for out of the abundance, at the end of it, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. But going on in verse 35 through 37, and this in the New King James, it says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you, verse 36, but I say to you that for every idle word man may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. That's pretty straightforward for us. Again, we're not going to talk about a list of do's and don'ts, what's appropriate, but simply we have to understand, brethren, the principle of it, and let each of us then take that back to God and help him show us how to implement this in our life. But we understand the principle of the Sabbath specifically is to honor God by making the Sabbath a special day, right? By refraining from the things that we do every other day of the week. And by specifically then not just avoiding those things that we do every other day of the week, but concentrating on activities, right? On conversations that honor God, that show respect for God, and help each of us draw closer to him and specifically appreciate what he does for us. Again, I'm not going to give you a list of do's and don'ts, but there are some specifics in the Bible. Look at 1 Corinthians 11, verse 4. New King James just simply says this, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Now, I've read in many commentaries over the years that that's probably the origin of this long-standing tradition in our culture for men to remove their hats to show respect. You know, they're going to, during a prayer or during the national anthem, you take the hat off, or when they enter into a house. You know, we understand that other forms of showing respect during prayer, bowing our head or kneeling when we're praying before God to show him respect. You could also look at it the other way. Standing is looked at a sign of respect in certain situations. Look in a courtroom when a judge enters. All rise. They all rise as show respect to the judge. Or when someone comes into the room or to your home. You don't just sit in your chair and say, how you doing? Have a seat, right? Typically, we stand up. We show them honor. We show them respect by standing up and greeting them. Turn over to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22, we're going to read a few scriptures here. That's basically what we're talking about here, the principle of the wedding garment. And again, while the main lesson, as we read through this, understand is not necessarily how to dress, what it does show us is a biblical precedent for proper attire. Matthew 22, let's start in verse 2. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. And again, he sent out another servant saying, tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed and all things are ready. Come to the wedding. But they made light of it and they went their ways, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his servants treated them spitefully and killed them. Verse 7, but when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways and find as many as you find, and as many as you find, invite them to the wedding. And so those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. And he said to him, friend, how did you come in here without the wedding garment? And he was speechless. The king said to the servant, bind him hand and foot, take him away, cast him out into utter darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Now again, we understand this. There's so much more meaning in this parable of the wedding feast. But the example that I'm trying to point out in this particular case is not necessarily how to dress, but it's showing about being prepared and appropriately coming before God. In April of 2010, an article was written in the State News by Liz Cursis, and she said this simply. She says, a person's attire is an interpretation of how he or she views the event. In other words, is it something that they're very excited to go to? They want to show their best side. They want to be respectful. And so they dress up as much as they can, or it's like, yeah, let's go check it out. I got my shorts and my flip-flops on, you know, and so what? Everybody else is dressed up. Think about that. Our culture over the years has gone really from one extreme to the other. Remember pictures back in the early United States? Men wore suits and ties and hats, top hats, right? Men women wore bonnets and dresses everywhere. At work, at play, they went for a picnic in the countryside. They all were just dressed very nicely. Look at today. The trend is completely opposite of that. It's casual. Right, faded jeans with holes in it are not only considered stylish, but I can go buy them at a store. You know, those are new, they say. You know, and you can wear them everywhere, even to formal events. In my childhood, I wore out a lot of jeans, but they were properly patched or dispatched when they got to be, you know, too holy. Holy, not H-O-L-Y, holy. Too many holes. There we go. There's also an article written in 2011 by Irene Taylor, and it was published on Bible Infonet, and it said this. It was just titled Dress for Respect. I liked what it said. Let me read it to you. It says, the clothes we wear may not, quote unquote, make the man, but they make a definite statement about our attitude towards ourselves and others. Business leaders recognize this and emphasize the importance of dressing for success. The way we present ourselves reflects our attitude towards life in general. We become so casual in our dress, we think casually even about events towards which respect should be shown. This lady says, a lax dress code shows a lack of respect. She says, there's a time when Christians knew that there was to be a difference in our manner of dress from that of the world. Christians believe the wisdom of 1 Timothy 2:9, and she quotes that here. It says, in like manner also, the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety. She goes on to say, Christian women dressed modestly, attractively, and femininely when in public and were treated with respect. Their demeanor in turn showed respect for the occasion. And this was especially true of such occasions such as worship services, weddings, and funerals. Alas, this is not true today. She says, too often we dress more appropriately for weddings and funerals than for our worship to the God of heaven. The former is to honor a human. The latter is to pay homage to our God. And think about that. I like that statement. She says, who among us would appear in the presence of a ruler of any nation in the same attire somewhere in the worship assembly. I also came across some comments about Herbert Armstrong. It talked about His daughter at one point, and the former owner of Belknap Springs, had said at one point is that he had one suit. It may have had holes in it, but it was always clean and well-pressed. And he always stressed the principle of not just what you do, but why you do it. Again, the point was to wear, we should wear our best to church, especially to church, because we are here to respect our God. Well, as we continue down then the list of commandments, and we talk about this aspect of respect, we understand that the last six commandments talk about having respect for our fellow humans. The first of this second set, right, the fifth commandment, deals directly with respect of children for parents. And I think it's very interesting that this particular one should come first. Because respect for God and fellow human beings is a concept that all parents that I know closely really work on with their children and really try to instill that in them. But you can turn back again if you want to Deuteronomy 6. We've read part of this in verse 4. And 4 through 7, but remember it said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Verse 7 specifically, it instructs us, it gives us this job. It says, you shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. So I know, especially in God's church, many parents begin by teaching their children the Ten Commandments and how important they are. Former leader of the FBI many years ago, J. Edgar Hoover, said one thing that I remembered and thought was worthy of repeating. He said, a child who has been taught to respect the laws of God will have little difficulty respecting the laws of man. I think that's probably very true and appropriate. But as we look down through the rest of these, brethren, look at the sixth commandment, we understand, involves respect for each other, for human life. The seventh requires respect for our mate in marriage. We can't be disrespectful to our mate, right? And also going along with that, the parental example of how we treat our husband, our wife, is very vital in bringing up our children, right? In our teaching role for them. The ninth commandment requires having a special respect and regard for the truth. And again, it comes back to we teach our children the importance of and the value of the truth. The eighth and the tenth commandment deal with simply with our respect for what belongs to someone else. So let's take this a little bit further. Let's break this down a bit. Let's consider how to show respect in other areas, in some of these other areas. Let's turn over to Romans 13, verse 1. We're going to talk about a little bit about respect for authority. We live in a culture in which that's really gotten bad. You know, I work with adults with disabilities, and I have about 350 of them in my facilities every day that are a complete joy to me to work with. And I have about 150 staff or so that sometimes aren't as much of a joy to work with. And I had a couple situations in the last 2 weeks. One, we had a participant who was having a behavior. He has a disability. So he has not yet overcome his disability. He's having a behavior. And in his anger, he had spit at one of the staff. And I came on the scene. The staff is now blown a gasket. And I intervene, send them on their way, and I help the participant get a grasp and calm down, and we discuss it. And I go talk to the staff then. I'm saying, what are you doing? You were out of line. I teach my and I insist my staff show respect to my participants at all times, no matter what. And this person said to me, did you see that he spit at me? I did. That doesn't matter. right? We're going to teach them not to spit, but you can't. You're the one who has the control over this, right? You have to be respectful at all times. Another situation I saw, I was working out on the floor, and one of the supervisors came and gave advice to one of his staff members. And the staff member gave him, well, his attitude wasn't great, but it was all right. As that supervisor went away, then this person started being just awful, saying terrible things about their boss, you know, and about the place he worked for. And I went over and said, hey, you need to put your mask back on where you're supposed to be. And we don't act that way. And he looks at me, he says, you need to mind your own business. I didn't say, oh, bless your little heart, you wayward soul. But complete disrespect, right? And they don't care the consequences. What about us? Romans 13, verse 1, as I digressed. Sorry. So many examples. You would have hundreds of examples of yourself. Romans 13, verse 1, out of the New Living Translation. It says, pay everyone what is owed, taxes to whom taxes are due, revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, honor to whom honor is due. Now, the tricky part is we say, well, do I get to decide who honor is due to, who respect is due to? Not quite that easy, right? We understand every human being is a future potential heir of God. 1 Timothy 5:1, let's just look at several scriptures here as we talk about this respect, disrespect for authority. 1 Timothy 5:1, I want to read this one out of the New Revised Standard Version. And there's hundreds and hundreds of scriptures we could have looked at. We'll just pick a few today. 1 Timothy 5:1, out of the New Revised Standard, it says this, do not speak harshly to an older man, but speak to him as to a father, to younger men as brothers, to older women as mothers, to younger women as sisters, with absolute purity. How good at this are you? I still have work to do. There's so many things when we look at our society, you know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I still subscribe to, you know, kind of the old ways. You know, for example, you know, calling our pastors necessarily sometimes by their first name, especially in a public setting. I'm not saying that's wrong. For me, it seems Mr. is more appropriate. Right? There's just so many things that we have to consider. Are we being respectful? Are we showing honor to the person? Exodus 20, verse 12. Out of the New Living Translation says this, and we talked about this a little bit ago, you know, directly dealing with respect of children for their parents. Out of the New Living Translation, Exodus 20, verse 12 says this, honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. See, this is where it all begins. This is that part where we start teaching our children, right? Teaching our children to have respect for God and for each other, and then as they grow up, it's so much easier. You can write down Ephesians 6, verse 2. It refers to the same thing. I'll read this out of the New Living Translation. It says, honor your father and mother. It says, going on to say in the New Living Translation, it says, this is the first commandment with a promise. Verse 3, it says, if you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you, and you will live a long life on the earth. Verse 4, it goes on to say, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. And remember here, we're talking about that respect. It's a two-way street. We treat our children disrespectfully, they're going to learn that. So this is telling us as fathers that this is a two-way street. But it also emphasizes to us that are children still, and to the parents, it emphasizes this crucial role of instruction that we as adults have, right? Teaching them the right things and disciplining them correctly and forming those values that some of us have trouble dealing with as adults. Specifically, we're talking about respect. Brother, we understand that the Bible emphasizes throughout the entire document that there has to be mutual respect in all relationships. Whether they're authority relationships, whether they're peer-to-peer relationships, there has to be mutual respect. Ephesians 5:21 in the NIV says this. It says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. See, authority, brethren, is not about personalities. It's about respecting God's authority that's vested in infallible human beings. But submit to one another. Maybe, I'd like to say that we're immune from this in God's church, but we're not. We're human. Maybe you know of somebody else's past sin, and you can't get past that. Maybe they've sinned towards you, and you can't get past that. So you have this grudge. See, we have to answer to God for that. You know, submitting to one another out of respect for reverence, as it tells here, that's talking about marriage as well. Turn over a little further in my page, Ephesians 5:33 out of the New King James Version. Ephesians 5, verse 33. It says, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. We won't spend the time, but if we looked at it in verses 5 through 9 of Ephesians 6, and you read through that. Actually, we will. Sorry. Someone encouraged me that the quicker I get done, the better. It wasn't their words, but that's how I interpret it. So I don't want to rush. Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 9. Let's read this. It says, bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart as to Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Verse 8, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free. And you masters, do the same thing to them, giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So again, we're talking at this point about that employer-employee relationship. Could be talking about the teacher-student relationship. Turn over to 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 5. We're also told to respect the property of others. Right? A common trend that we understand, that we read about, is not only take care of someone's, or a common trend we see in society, I should say, is to take care of my own property, but trash yours. Right? Whether we think about those of you who are landlords, you know, the whole tenant situation, rental homes versus owner-occupied homes. But 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 5, in the Net Bible version says this, as one of them was felling a log, the axe dropped into the water, and he shouted, oh no, my master, it was borrowed. Today, what happens is that happens, and you go, whew, I'm glad that wasn't my axe. Right? I mean, that's the attitude that we see out there. Let's use yours in case something happens. Philippians 2, verse 4, I'll read it to you out of the Net Bible version. It says, each of you should be concerned not only about your own interests, but about the interests of others as well. couple more. Luke 16. Let's turn over to Luke 16. Luke 16, we'll read, let's start in verse 10. This out of the New Living Translation, Luke 16, verse 10. It says, "If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibility." See, God knows this. He's giving us those opportunities now as humans to prove it, to prove that we can handle this. Drop down to verse 12, again out of the NET or the New Living Translation. It says, "And if you are not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own?" Again, hopefully we've learned this from youth, right? Teaching folks, or teaching our kids, right? Think about this. I used to have friends who their parents bought them. They always had the best stuff, the best motorcycles, the best things, you know, and we'd be working on ours all the time. But these, some of my friends weren't taught to respect their own property. And it's thus, when they borrowed your stuff and it broke, they're like, you should just buy a new one, right? So they didn't have that. They weren't brought up for that. Let's just look at a couple more areas. What about respect for God's creation? Genesis 2, verse 15. Genesis 2, verse 15, as we talk about respect for God's creation. And out of the NET Bible version, I want to read to you what it says. It says, Genesis 2, verse 15, it says, "The Lord God took the man and placed him in the orchard in Eden to care for it and maintain it." Think about that. Man's first recorded task was to take care of God's creation. Now, again, think about where we've gone from one extreme to the other, from clear-cutting timber and slaughtering all the buffalo on one extreme to people who will tie themselves to a tree if you're going to cut it down, to, you know, from utter disregard and disrespect for the environment to people who do worship actually the creation, not the creator. And so we understand that God expects us to respect, to take care of our property, or it's actually his that we're using, right? He expects us to take care of our property and that of others. What about 1 Corinthians 6, 9? We could talk about that just quickly. It talks about respect for our bodies. And this is a whole sermon in itself, but we could talk about 1 Corinthians. It's what it says in verse 6, 19. Again, this is a scripture many people know, very popular. We've been taught this. But in the New Revised Standard Version, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 says this. It says, "Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God, and that you are not your own?" Verse 20, "For you were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body." Again, telling us, you're not your own. Even your body belongs to God. I think that's a good point to start wrapping up and bring us to the final point. I think it brings us back to where we begin. Again, brethren, since everything, even our bodies, everything belongs to God, it all comes back to ultimately showing respect to him. Let's look at two more scriptures. Romans 13, verse 1. Romans 13, verse 1. I want to read this out of the New American Standard. I like what it says here. It says, "Let everyone be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God." God allows these things to happen. "For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God." Verse 2, "Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinances of God, Dropping down to the end of verse 4 there, it says, "For it," the authority, "is a minister or a servant of God to you for good." Last scripture, Psalm 24, verse 1. As we talk about, brethren, the complete lack of respect that we see in our world, and potentially the lack of respect that we might struggle with towards other people or towards God in general, it's something that we have to remember and we have to be diligent about, because again, one day we're going to stand before God and we're going to answer for all of these things. And when he asks, "Why were you nice to that person's face, but when they weren't there, you were disrespectful?" Or, "Why were you so disrespectful to so-and-so?" What are we going to say? I didn't know. I didn't want to. What are we going to say? I don't know. Psalm 24, verse 1, I think, says it all. Out of the New Living Translation, it says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The world and all its people belong to him." Brethren, I hope that with me you can see the importance of respect. And showing either respect or disrespect for anything or for anyone is in reality showing respect or disrespect towards our God himself. And I will leave it up to each of us here to determine how to show respect, and even in these categories that we've discussed, and in just in all areas of our lives. But I ask, let each of us remember that we are accountable to God, and that we'll have no excuse for failing to be respectful in all situations.